I'm going to be honest with you, Plant Friends. Sometimes I do episode topics on my podcast because you guys request them. And I don't necessarily want to grow this specific plant for myself, but I get enough requests from you guys that I go and I source an expert and I make an episode about it. This is not the case with this episode. I have had a curiosity about growing luffa for a while. And ever since I've done this interview, I've been thinking about growing luffa and harvesting it and what I'm going to do with it. Ever since. So I'm so excited to bring you this conversation with Janice Cox. She's a garden and natural beauty expert about the surprisingly simple and wildly useful plant, the luffa, that we should all be growing in our gardens alongside our cherry tomatoes or cucumbers, whatever else we're trellising. Like, the luffa plant should be in your garden. I was surprised at how simple growing this plant can be, but also how many different uses there are for it after you harvest it. And Janice walks us through it all. I'm so excited to share this conversation with you. So without further ado, here's Janice.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy.
The Luffa Queen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I'm excited to talk about one of my favorite plants, luffa.
You know, someone sent me a packet of luffa seeds like 4 years ago. I think I won them like in a giveaway or something. Mm-hmm. And I never grew them because they're not your classic garden edible plant. They're a great plant that gives you a lot of things that you know, gives you a really useful harvest. But I don't know, there's been something that stopped me. I've been a little, I guess, nervous or intimidated to try growing luffa. So I'm so excited. And from what I've heard, it's a great addition to a garden. So I'm so excited to platform the luffa and give the luffa the airtime that it deserves on this podcast.
Oh, I appreciate that. And actually, it is an edible plant. And it is a very useful plant. And that's kind of how I started out with it, because I'm a health and beauty writer. So luffa has always been something. It's not a new plant. It's actually an ancient plant that dates back to Egypt, Egyptian times. But people used it a lot as a plant material, a water filter. You know, they even made sandals out of it. But the most popular use of a luffa is your skin exfoliation, using it as a bath sponge. Mm-hmm. You know, now people also use it in the kitchen. They use it in the yard, the garden. I mean, it's useful as a sponge. So it's a sponge that you can grow. And it also is edible. So there are people that eat it. It's not super flavorful. I'd say it's kind of like a really green cucumber or kind of like okra. Okay. It's not, I mean, it does well. Most people use it in like stir fries. And, okay. You know, wear it on. But I like luffa because it's kind of full circle. And it's a beautiful, it has beautiful yellow flowers. It's a nice plant in your yard until the luffas kind of start. And I'll get into that. It's time to harvest. But it like pollinators love it. So it brings a lot of, I guess, life to your yard. And it's useful. So you can grow your own sponges. If you can grow a cucumber or other gourd, it's in the gourd family, then you can grow a luffa. So I hope you do try those seeds because they probably still work or are viable.
I'm sure. So before we dive into our luffa kind of tutorial, you're a garden writer, you're a beauty writer, you're a gardener with tons and tons of expertise. Have you always been a gardener? Like, what has your gardening history looked like?
Well, I grew up on a farm. So my dad was a citrus grower, and then, so I grew up, you know, the farming lifestyle. So I guess I was a DIYer without really realizing it, because we did it out of necessity. Now, I think people do it out of a lifestyle choice as well as necessity. But so gardening was just always something we did and I did. And I didn't grow luffa, though, when I was growing up. I don't think any of us grew luffa. But the beauty part of it is that's my strength, is I started out as a beauty writer and writing about do-it-your-own healthcare. Well, when you do that, so many of the your own are plant-based, herb-based, so it makes you wonder about the plants. So I kind of backdoored into becoming a garden writer because I wanted things for my beauty and wellness recipes. So that's kind of how it came to be. And then I started focusing on certain plants. I have books on lavender or roses, and I wrote a book about 6 years ago on luffa because I was, you know, talking about luffa so much. And every time I would talk to a group, they didn't realize that it's something you could grow a lot. You know, believe it or not, people thought would buy it at the drugstore or see it, you know, in markets, but they didn't realize that you could actually grow your own sponge. So that's kind of, wow. I don't know if I answered, I kind of gave you a lot of stuff.
No, it's very interesting that you kind of backed into gardening via your interest in clean beauty. Yes. Because I think in general, clean beauty and organic beauty and homemade beauty products are getting more and more popular. I've definitely been on my own clean beauty journey. And I think that's interesting. And of course, luffa would be like the number one thing you would grow. What else do you grow from that cosmetic standpoint? I would assume maybe you're growing aloe.
Well, you could grow aloe. I live in Oregon, so aloe is an indoor plant for us. But yes, okay. aloe is actually, you're right. It's one of the top beauty plants. It's, you know, it's called the first aid plant. Everybody should have an aloe. But luffa, I like to grow luffa. Herbs, plenty of herbs, lots of herbs, lots of flowers. There's so many useful flowers, roses, calendula, lavender, you know, yarrow can all be used. So, but I don't necessarily say that you have to grow everything, but understanding the plants and, you know, how they grow really makes a difference. And you're right. The whole natural beauty, clean beauty, organic beauty is popular now. It's not a new idea. I guess there's no such thing as new ideas, just improved upon ideas.
Right.
When I started out, you know, so many years ago and wrote my first book, Natural Beauty at Home Cookbook, and we had about 250 recipes. It was a cookbook for making body care products. Well, back then, a lot of it was about saving money. People were spending dollars at the department stores where they could make it at home for pennies. Now it's definitely a health choice, a lifestyle. I mean, it makes you a better consumer, I think. I buy a lot of products also, but I'm a label reader now. So, and here in the US, we're kind of more of a reactive country where there's only maybe 27 bad ingredients, where if you go to other countries, there's like 1,200, 1,500 that are on their list of, you know, so. Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand, gardening, beauty, you know, culinary stuff, just it all works together, right? Does that make sense?
I agree with you. I think especially being an American, like as I've been on my, you know, I've had skin cancer twice, so I've been on a big clean beauty, like skin journey, also pregnant, multiple miscarriages, been on a big fertility journey. Like you just realize how much of an educated consumer you have to be should you choose to live in the United States. And there's just so much stuff that isn't regulated, really. And it's interesting regarding aloe you mentioned, because I started looking into aloe last year. I had two consecutive facials at really fancy spas, like one of the nicest places in New York City, another one at like a really nice spa down here in Florida where I live. And both of the estheticians were like, you don't need these products, you need aloe. Like, just go get an aloe plant and put aloe on your face. And I was like, I have two estheticians that are like trained to sell me these like products that are telling me to go grow aloe. And I looked into it. And like you said, this isn't new. Like Cleopatra used
The original right? Green Queen.
The original Green Queen, right? Like none of this is new, but we've gotten far away from it and we have to remember, you know, these things. So I think that's fascinating. So I love this.
I will say, can I interrupt and say one note on aloe? Make sure if you are going to use aloe, it's aloe vera, because there's a lot of aloes out there that are toxic and have like a, almost like when you slice them, they have like a yellow latex in them. And you do not, so not all aloes are aloe vera, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yes.
So if somebody's listening and they have an aloe, because there are beautiful aloe plants out in their yard.
Yes. Yeah.
But you might not want to slice it. But yes,
good call.
Yeah, but aloe vera is amazing. And it's kind of crazy because it's like 95% water. Mm-hmm. That's what's funny about that plant. Okay, that's sorry to interrupt.
We all need more of. No, I love that. I love that. So loofah. Back to loofah. You briefly mentioned the history. I'd love to hear more about how loofah started in cultivation and how it's been used, because I'm surprised to hear how many uses you've even mentioned just in this short time we've been talking.
Well, loofah, really, if you think about it, it goes back to Egyptian times. There's even in the, what is it, the paintings, ancient paintings or mosaics.
The hieroglyphics?
Yes, yes. I know. Thank you for saying that, because I was going to mess it up. So of the loofah gourd plant, and people did, you know, make sandals out of it. They used it as a water. It's here, I'm going to hold up a loofah and you can kind of see it's a real fibrous. This is what I'm talking about. So it's very fibrous. Well, people use this as a filter. In fact, in World War II, when supplies were short, they used it as oil filters in the trucks. Wow. And so, and then there became, I think, there was a lot of people that did a lot of, there's been some crazy health spa ideas, but friction bathing, where really getting to boost your circulation, was they used loofah. And so that was something that was popular maybe in the 20s and 30s, friction bathing. Well, okay. And then if you think the now we use loofah because one of the best things you can do for your skin is to keep it clean, keep it full of moisture and protect it from the sun. Well, keeping it clean means exfoliating it. And so you wouldn't use loofah on your face or sensitive skin parts, but the loofah sponge is a great way to get rid of dead skin cells and surface impurities, things like that. And it's, you know, natural. Now, it is a natural product. So it also, like anything, it needs to be cared for. So you want to keep it clean. So, but that's pretty easy to do. You can throw it in your dishwasher on the top rack or in the washing machine with a load of towels or boil it on the stove. But you want to keep it dry and clean if you are using it quite a bit. And then what's nice about loofah is it's compostable. You can throw it in your compost, or I even sometimes will stick it in the bottom of my flower pots because it does help retain moisture. So I kind of feel like it gives them a little bit of a boost too in the summer months. But it is, and you can craft with it too. People will slice their sponges and then flatten them and use this as a material for making pet toys. I've seen it even sold at pet centers, you know, for birds and for dog chews. You can use it for, making the bath washcloths. So one side is like a cotton washcloth, one side's the loofah. So you can really do a lot with it. And, you know, I have a lot in my book. When I pick a book for a workbook, and that's really what I'm writing these days are workbooks, because people were always writing in my other books. So I decided, let's just give them a book that they can write in. And so, but I pick a plant, and that's why I pick loofah, that you can easy to grow. Also, you can eat it. So there's culinary recipes. You can make bread or, you know, stir fries or things with it. There's wellness recipes. So you can make toners and scrubs and soap with it. And there's also crafts. So you can make, you know, you can do art projects with it, if that makes sense.
So making soap. So when I think of the loofah, I think of this spongy material. How are you making soap? Are you?
Well, I'm adding it to soap.
Fibers?
Anybody that's a soap maker probably makes a loofah soap because you're not making soap with the loofah, but loofah is an added element to, I don't have a...
Like make it like an exfoliant, like to give
the soap. Yes. So people will slice up their loofah like with a bread knife, and then they take those slices, put it like say in a muffin tin or in a loaf pan, and then they will pour the soaps over it. There's a lot of those. If you're new to making soaps, you can buy melt and pour bases, you know, all different kinds, oatmeal soap, honey soap. And then you just melt that on your stovetop and then pour it over your loofah. And it's a nice gift. It makes a really nice gift from your garden. Yeah.
I did I did a digital detox at this amazing nature spa in upstate New York in September, and they had an incredible craft program. And one of the things that they did, like, and it was free activities all day. And one of the things they did was make your own soap. And I made so many soaps that it's still so we're doing this interview in March. We still use one of the, like, we're on our seventh soap from what I made in September, but it's so nice. And I remember I put dried roses in it as like a little exfoliant, but loofah would have been really cool. So there's a lot of applications for loofah. In the garden, how do you grow it? Is it a climbing plant? Is it a, you know, what's the best setup for loofah?
Okay, plant friends, here's the real talk. So July is when your garden starts telling you the truth. It starts getting heat. It may be some of your plants, if they haven't been fertilized yet, start showing signs of nutrition deficiency. It can start getting battered in July, right? This is where sometimes it's time to give some of your stressed plants or hungry plants a little TLC. And that's where Espoma Organic is going to come in for you in your gardens this year. Midsummer is an important time to feed your plants because if you're growing heavy feeders, especially edible plants, they're going to pull up all of those nutrients from the soil and you need to replenish. And that's where Espoma's organic line of fertilizers that they call Tones comes in. So what I love about the Espoma Tone or fertilizer line that they have is they basically have a fertilizer that is specifically curated for anything that you're growing. They have a tomato tone for your tomatoes. They have a rose tone for your flowering plants, a holly tone for your acid loving plants like hydrangeas and blueberries. I use their citrus tone on my citrus trees. There's a bulb tone for your bulbs. You get the gist, right? You get what I'm saying? And they're all made with natural and organic ingredients, plus beneficial microbes and humates to support healthy soil over time. They're long lasting and they're slow releasing. So you sprinkle them at the top of the soil. And then every time it rains or every time you water, your plant gets a boost of nutrients, which is fabulous. If you're more someone who likes to water with a watering can every day, they also have a line of liquid fertilizers that you can mix right into your watering can and then feed your plants that way. Whatever type of gardener you are, they have the fertilizer for you. And if you're an indoor plant parent only, I have been using their indoor liquid houseplant food for literally 8 years. It's super gentle, all organic, and fabulous. Espoma truly has the right fertilizer, compost, potting mix, garden soil, whatever media you need, Espoma has the right one for you. So you can learn more about their indoor and outdoor products that are safe and organic for people, pets, and the planet online at Espoma.com, or you can click the link in the show notes and go to my curated Amazon storefront of all of my Espoma faves.
It is actually, it's a climbing plant. So what, there's three main things you need to be successful with loofah. You need full sun, lots of sun. It's a tropical plant. Let's face it, it came from Egypt, right? So it's a tropical plant. It needs pollinators. You need an area. A lot of people will plant, like lavender or other, you know, things around that will bring the pollinators in to, because you definitely need pollinators to grow your sponge. And then it needs support. So it needs either a trellis or a fencing. I mean, I've gone to, you know, and you don't necessarily, it can be in the ground. I usually grow mine in pots, and I've gone to some of these loofah farms that where they just have the pots lined up along like a piece of like cyclone fencing. And then, but they do have a lot of other plants around to bring the pollinators in. You can hand pollinate, and I can tell you about that because when the loofah starts climbing, and it will climb if it's in the right conditions and it's happy, it really takes off. You know, people, I've even seen lately a big trend are loofah lounges. You know how people used to do the sunflower houses where they build and then they'd go inside and read their book or something. Well, now they're having loofah lounges where they're just kind of building trellises and the loofah is just covering it. And it's nice because then they kind of hang down. It's, you know, I guess if you have the space.
Curved trellis. Yeah, it's so beautiful.
But for me last year, I just had it out on my deck in two big pots. And I used a dark colored pot because I did want to keep them pretty warm. I live in Oregon, so I'm zone 8A. So we're not really known for loofah. You know, big loofah states are usually like Florida, North Carolina, California does well, Texas does well, you know, warmer climates. But it can be done pretty much anywhere. You just have to kind of keep them warm and make sure there's pollinators around. Or you're
okay, so you got to plant some flowers, got to plant your pollinator plants around the loofah.
Yes.
So let's talk about that, because they have male and female flowers. So how do you identify those?
That's very okay. So yes, you have the male and the female flowers on the same plant. And it's pretty easy to tell the difference. The males show up first. They're in groups and they're kind of flat faced. And so you'll have a lot of bright yellow flowers that will show up in clusters. And the first time when I had all my males show up and I went out one day, there was a lot on the ground. And I thought maybe I had raccoons or squirrels or something getting in there, eating all my buds. But actually, that's part of, and I think anybody that grows cucumbers or squash know this, it's called blossom drop. So if all of a sudden, if those male flowers aren't being used, they leave, they drop. But they'll keep coming. So eventually the female flowers will show up. And you can tell that because they're a little larger and they have what looks almost like a little loofah behind them. So when the females show up, that's when you want to really pay attention for pollinating. And you really can just take a male flower and touch them together, kind of match them up, give them a date or something, if you're worried about, if you don't see a lot of pollinators. And pollinators aren't just bees. You could have ants. You could have, which I don't know, not everybody wants a bunch of ants around, but ants do help. You could have hummingbirds. You could have, you know, moths or native bees. So just as long as you have somebody that's kind of getting the pollen from one flower to another. But I will go out there, especially because I have a short growing season, and kind of match them up when I see the female show up.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
You're literally like, yep. So you're like taking a male flower off the vine and then basically bringing the male flower to all the female flowers, giving it a date.
Yes.
Speed dating.
Yes. 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 Okay. Speed dating. I like that. Loofah speed dating.
And then the female flower that you said has the little start of the loofah at the end, that's what gets pollinated and then allows, like a cucumber, like allows that loofah to take off.
Right. And then that will start growing. And there's different stages depending how you want to use your loofah. So if you want to use it as an edible, you can, when it gets about maybe 6 inches long, you can cut it and use it and cook with it. And people make pickles with it, like I said, or they make like zucchini bread, but loofah bread, or stir fries. So if you're somebody that wants to eat it, you would do it then. I obviously want the sponge material. So I let it go all the way, which can take anywhere from 75 to 90 days, depending where you live. And it will turn, I think I have one, I don't know, it's been kind of worked over my classes, but I don't know if you can see this, but you'll get a loofah that has kind of a brown outer skin to it. And when they're growing, they're green, but you're going to peel off this brown skin, and underneath is what you'll have that will be the skeleton that you're going to want to use as the sponge. Now, this year, I had a lot that really didn't develop. They were still green, maybe in like late October, early November. So if that happens, I usually pick them with about, here, I'm not in the screen, but maybe about a foot or two of vine, and then bring them in the house and just let them continue to dry in my home. Now, I've seen some people, there are groups. If you get into loofah, there are, you know, Facebook groups and loofah interest groups that you could join. And there's probably even your local master gardener group knows about it. But you can take the those, and some people have bake them in the oven. I don't do that. I just kind of leave them in my office and ignore them, and they do dry out. And, you know, and I will say about the seeds, once you start growing loofah, each loofah has probably 100, 150 seeds in them. So you will become very rich in seeds. You'll be a hit at your seed exchange because, But that's how you kind of know it's time to harvest. You'll hear the seeds rattling in there, and you'll, see, it'll be kind of brown and ugly. You really don't want it in your yard anymore.
So it's male, female flowers. The female flower gets pollinated. The loofah starts to grow at the bottom of the female flower. The female flower is ultimately going to fall off and you get this green gourd that's going to be on your fence for how long does it take for a loofah to grow to get to that browning part cycle?
I think probably about the average, and read your seed packets, but I would say the average is 75 days. Okay. I feel like this year I planted, I'm in Oregon, and so I planted mine in the ground probably in May because we have a short growing season, and I was harvesting them in October. So what is that? May, you know, June, July, August, September. So it took me almost 4 or 5 months to get them.
Okay. But the cue that you're looking for, yep, is for that green gourd to start turning brown, which is like it's almost drying itself out on the vine.
Yes, yes. It will dry out on the vine. If you just do nothing, it will dry out on the vine. Yes.
And that's when you start to hear the rattling of the seeds.
And you feel it and it'll have kind of a crunchy texture to it. Yes.
Okay. So when you bring it in and... while we're growing this in our garden, what is the water requirements and what is the light requirements for loofah?
Well, water requirements are probably the same as any like tomato, pepper, anything. You want to keep it well watered, you know, have good drainage. Right, right. I mean, you don't want to overwater. Isn't that it? More plants are killed with too much water than not enough. But you do want to, it does require, you know, water. I mean, so I would just... how can I say it? Water it. I just kind of keep it watered, but not, I let it dry out between waterings. I hadn't really thought about it. I just water it like I do all my other plants.
All your other edible plants.
But it's not something that needs to be overwatered. Does that make sense? Or kept moist? Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
And what about light?
Full sun. Full sun. It needs at least 6 hours of, 6 to 8, 6. At least 6 hours of full sun, 8 would even be better. The more sun, the better. It's a sun lover. I mean, that's why you'll see these in the sun states like Arizona, Texas, California, Florida. You know, I know I went on vacation and bought a lot of loofahs in Mexico because they, you know, they grow very well down there.
Okay. Okay. Got it. So full sun. And then when you bring it in, how do you process the loofah? Are you literally just peeling that hard brown part off and then you're just revealing the loofah sponge and there you go?
Yeah, I wish I had one to peel, but here's a little one. And I guess I should say how you harvest it is you cut off both ends. So you have your loofah gourd, you would cut off both ends and shake out all your seeds. Mm-hmm. And then I save my seeds.
Okay.
The seeds are actually kind of one advantage of the loofah because they're pretty large. They're like the size, I don't know if I have any seeds here.
They're like pumpkin seeds, kind of.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you can see this Ziploc bag, but they're not as big as pumpkin seeds. Can you see that? They're kind of like sunflower seed size. They're a black.
Okay, there's and black. Right. Yeah, black sunflower.
So I would save the seeds and then cut off both ends, shake out all the seeds into a bowl, and then I kind of just step on it, you know, step on it, massage it between my hands. Some people soak them, you know, for me, and then just start peeling off the brown outer skin.
Okay.
Peel it off like that. Now, this one is kind of a darker color. If you're listening, it's kind of normally they're kind of like a creamy color. And this one's a little darker brown because it's this is one of my later ones that I got in November. But some people, this is a matter of personal choice. You can leave them the natural color, or some people, if they're doing it for gift giving, will soak them in like a diluted hydrogen peroxide solution or maybe vinegar. Mm-hmm. To kind of clean them up a little bit. So, or boil them on the stovetop. You know, the only thing I wouldn't do is I would get them wet and clean them. You could clean them in your dishwasher, is not put them in the dryer or dry them. You want to naturally dry them because that'll harden them up. If you've ever bought one in the drugstore, they're a lot harder because these are commercially processed than one that you would grow. It's almost... a dramatic difference if you were to squeeze them. You know, I know we don't have squeeze TV here or you know webinar, but once you try a homegrown one, they're a lot softer and nicer to use than the commercial ones.
I forgot to ask. So, are you direct sowing these in your garden from seed, or are you starting them indoors and making little plants and then transplanting them?
I do both. And you can do both. This year, I'm going to just do it straight into the container, because I had good luck with that last year. In other years where I've been home more, I have started them in. I like to make pots out of like newspaper, even though now there's not as much newspaper. So everybody's using cardboard from their boxes. But I like to make planters and put them in that then I can just stick it straight into the ground. But you can start them indoors. It kind of gives them a boost. And then you'll be a little bit ahead of the game as far as harvesting. Last year, like I said, I just waited I read the Farmer's Almanac. And I think my go time was around Mother's Day, when I didn't have any more frost. And then I just stuck them in the container. And so either way, and then once they are up, you really don't need to do much until they start flowering. And then I would feed them with some good all-purpose fertilizer or alfalfa meal, and then let them go and then just let them go, water them, watch them, and then pollinate them. If you don't see a lot of pollinator action around your vines, then I would do the hand pollinating. And then once you see them starting to turn brown and you kind of give them a shake on, squeeze them on the vine and they feel crunchy and you hear they're ready to harvest.
Okay.
It's a pretty simple, once you get in the groove of it, it's a pretty straightforward plant. You can't really mess it up. Well, I guess you can, but that's a whole other thing.
Once you peel the brown, you bring it inside, you shake the seeds out, you peel the brown exterior out, and you have your, long gourd of loofah. Can you just cut it up and start using it as a sponge? Or do you have to boil it to soften it? Do you have to treat it at all? Or for the most part, you can just start using it if you're going to use it as a sponge or put it in soap or do something like that.
Yes, you can just start using it. Now, some people it depends, on the intended use. If you're going to use it in the shower or the bath, you might like it a larger size than if you're going to use it to scrub your pots and glassware on the kitchen sink, you might just want a smaller, but just with a serrated knife, or you can just easily slice it. It does have kind of a tough core to it. So I do know some people will process it where they will slice it down. I don't know if I have a piece. I might have a piece of that. Maybe here's one where they will slice. I don't know if you can see this, but what I've done is they've cut the outer thing out. So they have kind of more of a flat piece, and they will wet this down.
They've shaved it to kind of make it a flat piece instead of a circular gourd.
Yes. So they will put what they'll do with that is they'll wet them, maybe put it between heavy books, or even I've seen people that put them under plywood and drive on them, to really flatten them down.
Flatten them out to get sheets of loofah.
Right. And then, you can sew with it. It is a material. So then if you are wanting to make the bath mitts or the washcloths or a pet toy, I know a project I like doing is I'll take the slices and I'll feel, I will make the birdseed mix, a birdseed mixture. I don't know if you make bird treats, but I will make the birdseed mixture and I will kind of push it into the loofah slices and hang those outside in my trees. And the birds like them because they like chewing on the loofah and then they eat all the seed. And sometimes you can even get a couple uses out of it. So that's another.
Cool. I have two parakeets. I wonder if I could just make some bird toys for them by like shoving millet in them.
Where I got the idea is I saw them being sold in pet stores for parrots. So I wonder. Yeah. So you might just mix a little bit.
You've now said two things. It's like now I live in South Florida in zone 10B. So I feel like since I've moved, I do like all the interviews I do. I'm like, I'm so excited to interview about hydrangea, even though I know I personally am not going to be able to grow them, but I know my audience will. But I'm like, okay, you said loofah can be grown in Florida, like in warm zones. I'm like, check. Maria. And they can be used as parrot toys, which is another random thing about me, is that I have parakeets. So you're like, really, I'm really getting sold on this loofah. Are there different varieties of loofah that you can grow, or is it really just one variety?
There are about three main ones. The one that you want for the sponge is, I'll mess up the botanical name, but it kind of has a gyptic Egyptica. Egyptica, it's, it has the word Egypt in it. Remember that.
Okay.
And that's
okay.
The one. There's also a wild loofah that's kind of like little, I think I have those here. They're smaller. And I don't know if you can see this. They're kind of like little balls of loofah. And this is a wild. Now, I've only seen this in Arizona. And I ordered seeds from a company in Arizona. But I like it because the way I learned about it is I received a flower arrangement from somebody and they were used in the flower arrangement.
And like the dried loofah on the vine, kind of.
Yes. And I really like the look of it. So I did some, and it starts with an O. It's like, but it's called wild loofah. So you could grow the wild loofah, but the one most people do is if I had a seed pack and it also, it's called, when you go to the garden shop to get loofah, it's called a lot of different things. It's called like a sponge gourd. It's called the dish rag gourd. It's by its botanical name, just loofah. It's spelled probably three different ways. So you just kind of have to really press on because almost all garden stores, especially in Florida, they're going to have it, you know.
Okay.
But you just kind of might have to, it might be called something different. Even one I saw once was called Seven Happiness Gourd. I don't know what that means.
Wow.
I have them. Yeah, I have a whole bag of different seed packets. What's that? I
hope they use the Latin names in addition to all of the nicknames, because the nicknames can get so confusing. Yes. So what are the top mistakes you see people making with loofah, growing loofah? They're like first timers.
Okay. Actually, I think a lot of people don't put them in a full sun. And I know the people that have had problems that have talked to me about it. It's usually they've been too cold, or they start them inside and then they stick them out and kind of shock them, right? You kind of then gradually have to introduce them to the outside. If they are nice and warm in your house, you don't just stick them out during the first heavy freeze, right?
Okay, because they're warm weather loving plants.
Okay. Right, they're warm weather loving plants. So I think that's one thing, is getting them cold. The other thing I've seen is people not really paying attention to pollinators, that realizing that they do need to be pollinated. And if you're not getting the bee action or the hummingbirds or the ants, you need to go maybe pollinate it, you know, not paying attention when they see the females. And it takes a while. I mean, you'll see the males will come first. And so people get all excited. It's the female flowers that come after that. And sometimes it's a couple weeks after. So really paying attention to the flowers is another thing. And then giving them, you know, support, I think so. But I think it's like any plant, there's good years and bad years, right? I mean, you know, sometimes you have the bumper crop of cherry tomatoes and then, well, usually you always have the bumper crop of cherry tomatoes, but I'm saying you could have a really good year of one and then not so much, depending on the weather. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But I think that
weather and pollinators probably hurt you more than anything.
Okay. This is another win for me, because this summer I'm having a baby in June, so I'm not going to do my normal edible food. I just want to plant flowers in my raised beds this year so I could plant the loofah on my trellis, and I'm just going to have all the flowers bringing pollinators in.
And yes, and then you could just sit there with your child and, oh, that'll be nice. I like that image.
Yeah. Who knew I was going to get so sold on loofah today? I was just like, oh, I want loofah because I think my audience would find this interesting, not like this is going to be Maria's next like obsession plant.
Oh, Maria, you have to try it. I think you will like it. That's kind of what happened with me. I was always buying loofah and using it in the shower. Then I thought, you know, I'm going to try and grow this. It really was kind of a fun plant, and it's a good conversation plant, you know, to talk. Yeah.
It's a great gift too. Like, especially if you make, you know, I feel like we've had a couple of conversations on the podcast lately about like making your own herbal bath salts and like, or doing candles or doing soaps. Like we talked about, like a homegrown loofah. That's a pretty cool gift, like to give a friend, like, oh, hey, I have extra loofah. Do you want some? Like, that's pretty cool.
It's very cool. And what I do if I don't have a lot is I will take slices of the loofah and I tie that, like if I'm doing a gift basket, you know, with bath salts or lip balms or whatever. And then I will tie it as kind of like a package topper. Right.
Yeah.
And it looks cute, so cute. And they can use that. And yeah, people don't, but I know people, even guys like them, because if you're like into washing cars and things like that, it's not, it's sturdy enough to wash a car or the tire, you know, and you can use it out in the yard or in it. It's, you know, it's growing. It's a cool thing. People like it now because it's a sustainable, you know, how that's a product, right? Where it's full cycle. It comes from seed back to seed, and you also can, you know, throw it in you can break it down out in the yard. So
yeah,
throw it in your flower pot.
So easy to harvest too. Cause you know, you're not like going through tomato juice to like get your tomato seeds. Like it's an easy, cyclical plant to just harvest your seeds and then plant again the next year, which I love too, from a sustainability standpoint.
And I'll give you a little tip on the seeds. That's one thing I didn't start with. The seeds are pretty big, but what you do is you also need like a toenail clipper. This will really help you, because take your seeds and soak, and if you don't want to do the toenail clipper thing, don't do it. But take your seeds and definitely soak them 24 hours before you plant them, because it is a really hard-sided seed. I mean, you'll see when you buy them, they're real hard. People eat the seeds. They roast and eat the seeds too. But what you do is when you look at the seed, you'll see it has kind of a rounded bottom. Well, if you take a piece of sandpaper, a toenail clipper, and just give it a little nick before you soak them, that really helps, because it gets more water into the seed.
And
people do that with, there's other seeds when you, you read that, where it's better to kind of rough them up a little bit. And so they absorb more moisture. And then, so I'll do that, soak them 24 hours. And then if I have old seeds and I kind of want to know, you know, somebody gave me seeds and whether they're going to work or not, I will put about, six or so on a wet paper towel and put it inside like a plastic bag and stick it in my, put it up in my shelf or something for, maybe a couple of days, and then bring it out. And, you know, you've probably done that. Sometimes you need to kind of test your seeds. And so that'll give you, plus also, well, gardening teaches you patience, but sometimes I'm not the most patient gardener, and it avoids you then digging up and seeing what's going on and messing up your loofah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, if people are interested in growing loofah, you have a great guide that has step-by-step photos, a little bit more information. And also, like you've mentioned, you've written a million books and workbooks. So where can everyone find you if they want to learn more about not just growing plants, but about beauty and potentially growing plants for, you know, natural beauty remedies? You have so many, so many resources. So where can we find you? And of course, we'll put everything in the show notes.
Yeah, put it all in the show notes. My books right now are all, you can get them all. I work with the same people that do Mother Earth News magazine, which is, there's a lot of great, I mean, if you want to become, you know, self-sustaining in a lot of different ways. So my books are published by Ogden. And so if you go to the Mother Earth News website, you can also go, I know I talk kind of crazy and touch on a lot of things. If you want to go on my website, also it's my name, and you know, I'll answer your questions and things like that. But the books, even if you go on my website, they go straight through to the Mother Earth News bookstore. And that's
Is it JaniceCox.com?
Yes. JaniceCox.com. Yes. Great. Or naturalbeautyathome.com. Same thing.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. It's all going to the same, it's all redirecting to the same place.
It all goes to the same place, and all the books are, sometimes I see them on other sites and in different bookstores or garden stores, but I would say that's the easiest and the best prices too.
Okay, great to know. Well, thank you so much. This has been so, you have hyped me up about loofah. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's going to be trying it.
That's good.
Visiting your website. And yeah, thank you so much.
Well, I hope you do try growing loofah. And if you do, send me a photo, because I really, or post a bunch about your adventures with loofah. That'd be good. Yeah. But I wish you all the best. I mean, right now, just enjoy everything and take good care of yourself till June.
Thank you. Okay, plant friends, I hope this episode inspired you to try something new in your garden. And if you liked it, share. And if you think you have a gardener in your life that hasn't grown loofah or likes growing loofah, share this episode with them, because they probably want to listen to it as well. Pick up a couple
tricks or get some inspiration on what to do with their harvests. Janice's info will be in the show notes. And remember, I hope this episode is an inspiration that your plants can do more than just nourish you and nourish your space. They can nourish your whole life. How fun is that? With that very cheesy comment, I wish you to keep growing joy. Until next time.
Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.